Welcome to everyone, and we're very, very happy that you're here. And as I said, we have 135 people registered for this call from all around the world, and so it's great to have you here. I know that many will actually be live on the call and many will be listening on the recording later. So however it is that you've joined us, we're so happy that you are here and look forward to your comments and questions as well when we get to that point in the program. Maria and I will talk together for maybe about 40 minutes or so. And then we'll open the call up for questions. And when that time comes, if you just press 1 on your phone if you would like to make a comment or ask a question, and then I can give you a microphone to come in. We're such a large call that we will keep everyone on mute except for Maria and me just for the first part of the dialogue, actually through the questions too, just to make sure we have a quiet space. But when you want to speak, just press 1 on your phone and we'll bring you in on the microphone. So again, Maria, welcome, and I was so thrilled to read your book, actually before it came out, have the opportunity to read the manuscript and actually endorse the book. I really appreciated that opportunity a lot, and I'm so thrilled to have you here. We had a great conversation earlier this morning, sort of priming ourselves for this time with an audience, and it was so exciting to me to just dive in so quickly to some of the things that we were talking about, and I'm sure that some of them are going to show up on the call today. So thank you so much for being here. And I'd love to just ask you first to tell us a little bit about your personal story that led to your book and led to your current work. How did you get to where you are?
That's a good question. Oh, my goodness. It really feels like it's been a million years, but it has only been a couple since stepping into this work. Basically, I spent 23 years growing up in corporate America. You know, I bucked the system, which is the Italian family unit, and went to college, which was virtually unheard of, and I am dating myself. Went to college and got an education and joined the corporate ranks and worked internationally for 23 years. As you and I were laughing about this morning, I learned very quickly how to sleep on a plane going back and forth to to Hong Kong and a lot of different cities in Asia. And I loved it. I have to tell you, I absolutely loved it. But my career brought me an enormous amount of stress and unhappiness and imbalance in my life. And while I was achieving in quite a big way, and working with some of the top companies in the industry I was in, and I was always asked to do, you know, some rollout, some initiative for the company well beyond my job, which was, you know, quite flattering. But then you get to a point where you're completely burned out. And not only was I burned out, but I kept repeating the same, you know, destructive pattern, which is you reach a certain point and then everything would blow up. Or I would just work to the point where I thought that I was going to literally collapse. That I wasn't able to really engage people and get them to get on board or use my influence properly to make things a lot easier, not only for myself but for other people. And so there was a series of vacations that happened. I think, you know, when you take a step away from your work for a while, you get some clarity, and that's exactly what happened. The first was, you know, going out to the Galapagos Islands and sitting in the middle of nowhere because, let's face it, there's nothing out there but the sea life and creatures and me and the people on my boat, which were, you know, 6 Canadians. And then coming back, realizing that I needed to make a change, but not knowing how, and stepping right back into the craziness of my life, I went on another vacation, and this was hiking in Utah, and this was the one that changed my life. And after sleeping for 2 days for about, you know, 16 or 18 hours, I went on a meditation hike, and the leader said, go and find a place on a rock and sit. And be with yourself for a while and ask the question to the problem that you're having in your life now. And my question is, why does this exhaustion, why does this craziness keep happening to me? Why do I still feel unfulfilled in what I'm doing? Why does it always seem to blow up? Why is there always a drama? You know, whatever it is, you know, but this time it just felt worse. And I waited, and then the answer really came to me pretty quickly, and it was a quiet voice that said, who are you? You are spirit and light, and when you honor and respect yourself, you honor and respect me. And that became a pivotal point in my life, because when I came down, I realized that everything that I'd ever believed about needing to achieve success was materializing in front of my eyes, and it wasn't necessarily positive. And that also meant some of the relationships that I was having, you know, within that context. So literally walked back into, you know, where I was staying and met my first teacher, who really taught me a lot of principles around a lot of the hermetic principles that I weave into my work, which is about cause and effect. That would be the first one. And I just became a voracious student. I changed my leadership style and how I was working with people, and my whole life changed from there. And 5 years after that experience, or 6 years after that experience, I decided to leave the corporate world and write a book about the process of regaining your leadership and what it means.
Fantastic. You know, I think this is another really kind of interesting place where of how you and I come together here, in that we're examples of someone who had a burnout or had a crisis, in a sense, and realized, I have to change my life. And my story is different from that, in that there was just this gradual evolution into realizing there's something more, there's something else that wants to happen. So there wasn't a crisis, there wasn't a burnout, it was just a shift. I was a singer in New York and a voice teacher for opera singers, and having a great career at that. And in fact, when I left graduate school, I said, so my goal is to teach singers who sing on the biggest stages of the world. By the time I was 40, I was doing that. My students were singing at the Metropolitan Opera and leading roles on Broadway and all the major opera houses in Europe. And I was saying, you know, I'm really good at this, and I'm not learning anything anymore.
Mm-mm.
And so for me, it was this kind of shift into, I need to keep growing. I need to keep learning. And I think there's something more that I'm supposed to do here. And so kind of following that energy through a series of transitional steps, but ultimately to hearing about this thing called coaching, and already beginning to do some work in personal development with artists and performers, actually, initially, and then that grew to beyond artists and performers. So I did my coach training in 2001, and by 2003, by the end of the summer of 2003, I'd completely shifted my income to coaching, and I moved out of New York and lived in the country and kind of began a whole new life. So I love this contrast here, because I think that it's an important message for people to realize that we can make choices along the way with where we go. It doesn't have to be a crisis. For some of us, there's a crisis. There's a meltdown. We're doing what we thought we were supposed to do, and then we realize, for whatever reason, this isn't it. And for others, it's just this evolutionary process, and both are great.
Yeah, and I think
it's in another place. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it also comes down to how much pain, how stubborn are you, at least for me? How stubborn are you, and how set are you in what you truly believe is important, you know? So.
Well, you know, I was never too much into pain, so I was sort of saying, I think there's another way. I think I'm going to look for that. So that's great. Well, thank you for kind of giving us a context into how you came to where you are, and for us to sort of establish this context of where we both come in terms of doing leadership work now. And for me, it's just been this ongoing understanding in more recent years of life and leadership as energy in motion. And that's so much of what we'll talk about today, and how that shows up in your work and how it's showing up in mine, and what does that mean for us at this time in the world. There are a couple of words that you're using a lot these days, impact and influence. And I know that's, you know, the theme of this call is talking about how to have impact and influence from where you are in your current position in the world, whatever that is. So I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about how you make a distinction between those two words, impact and influence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the point is where you are now. So if I could just say, it's important to know that wherever you are now, you're there for a reason. And wherever you are, you have the ability to make this impact or influence, even if you are aspiring to something greater than where you are. So yes, I think there is an important distinction between the words impact and influence. And a lot of times people get it all tangled up. But they are often confused with issues of power in the roles of leadership. And impact is really how your actions affect other people, and oftentimes this is associated with force. So when you say you want to have an impact, your impact is about your action. And that's really important, because both you and I talk about your thoughts and your beliefs create your actions. So it's important to know that impact is really the actions that you're having on others, and sometimes if they're not in alignment with your higher self, they're actually quite negative and are forceful. The second is influence is actually how you engage, network, and build relationship with others for either their betterment or detriment of yourself and them. Influence creates policy, affects character and behavior, and the behavior of others, either positively or negatively. So both could be used one way or the other, and that's, you know, the beauty of polarity. Excuse me, but one is about engaging other people and building relationships, and the other is about the actual physical actions that you take.
You know, I love how you're talking about this because I start to get a picture of, you know, I talk about the vertical and the horizontal and how we have our greatest impact in the intersection. For those who that's a new concept for, the vertical is the being aspect of our existence, and the horizontal is the doing or the action. And where we will have the greatest impact is in the intersection of the being and the doing, so that both are engaged. And so as I'm hearing you talk about this, it sounds like you're kind of saying that impact really is what happens in the horizontal. That's in the three-dimensional world. It's the action or result of action. And influence is much more about the being, of influencing an energy or a state of being. Or does that make sense? Does that correlation draw for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's actually, I think that's a brilliant way of saying it. Thank you, Alan. That's fast.
Well, yeah, you're welcome, because it's, I feel like that this is an important piece of how we're moving forward in leadership and coaching and government, business, everything in the world right now is kind of bringing a balance back into place between the vertical and the horizontal, between, in fact, influence and impact, and being aware of where we need to be in any particular moment. And maybe that would be an interesting thing to ask you to talk a little bit about, because when might we be, in your experience, when do we want to focus a little bit more on the influence end of things, and where do we want to focus a little bit more on the impact?
Well, I think they both are really valuable, because right now we're at a pivotal point where we have to make some decisions about how we're going to proceed as a society, as a culture. This is part of the conversation that we were having this morning, which is we're at this place that Irvin Laszlo calls a bifurcation. Either you're going to break through or you're going to break down as a society. And it is a pivotal point of anybody's evolution, any culture, any society's evolution. So here we are, and we have to decide what's really important to us. Now, what you really decide is important to you is going to determine your actions, because that's what you believe. And then how you engage with people around that is also important, because that's how you're going to inspire them or shut them down. And, you know, we're going to take this perhaps from a little bit more national view than people might expect of this conversation. But living in today's political climate, you have to think about, how do you really want to impact the situation? How do you really want to influence it? And what can you do to actually bring the process forward? Do you think that's fair to say, Alan?
Absolutely, and it's, again, as I'm listening to you, it's so interesting that you keep talking, as I do, in just different language, but about doing the work in the vertical first, making your choices and decisions, knowing who you're going to be, knowing what's important to you, knowing the energy that you want to put forth into something, and listening also to your values, to who you are, to how you're called to show up in the world, and then letting that inform the action. So it's this coming back into that place of being that then informs the doing, and that's a huge piece of what we need to be looking at this point in our country, but I think also in the world.
Yeah, I think so too, and we have to realize that we are, you know, even though we are a nation unto ourselves, we have a great deal of influence all over the world globally, because we're all interconnected with our monetary system. That's the one on the third, you know, on three-dimensional plane, but energetically we're all, you know, we are all one. That is really the law. We are all one. We're all the same, so we affect each other constantly. I think if I could put some of this influence and impact into everyday terms, I think that would be really helpful. For people who are listening to this call, if you're a leader, you may not think you're a leader. You may not have been assigned that role. You may not have been assigned that, you know, that very important title at the end of your business card. But if you're inspiring other people to do, be, and have more, then you're a leader. And that truly is the definition that I see of leadership, and that came from John Quincy Adams. So whether you're affecting your and influencing and inspiring your community, if you're a Cub Scout leader, that's great. If you are somebody who manages other people, that's great. If you're in a political office, that's great. If you're like Alan and I, who are talking to masses of people about leadership, consciousness, and transformation, awesome. You know, it's all great. We're all leaders in our own way. But what you have to realize is that you have influence on other people, and that's the engagement with other people and how you choose it. And using, again, the political situation as a really good example, you have a choice. Either you're going to engage in today's situation, what's going on right here, in a very angry and negative way, which will villainize one party or another to make them wrong, okay? And that will probably either evoke more anger, which is really not what we need right now, or it will shut them down, which, quite frankly, we don't need that either. So it's important to understand that your influence and how you're engaging with people on important topics for you or the things that you are passionate about, you have to deal with them with compassion and acceptance. And that might be very hard to understand in the given climate.
You know, there's, I love how you're talking about this, and it kind of brings me to, sometimes I talk about three levels of leadership, the first level of leadership being following a leader, and that is also leadership in exactly the way you're talking about right
yeah.
now, because it's on an energetic level, you are making a choice to give energy to a particular philosophy or way of doing something, a particular belief. And by giving energy to that, then you are having influence in what's going on. And then the next level of leadership is choosing to be a leader for your own life, which ultimately we must all, if we're going to have successful lives and whatever success means to you, you have to take on the leadership of your own life. Then that third level is perhaps is in leading others. So that's I think how you're speaking about it here for influence is helping us to also be aware that we are leaders just because we choose to give energy to a particular, whether that's political platform or a particular way of doing business or a particular kind of culture that's built within a corporation. You know, what are you giving energy to? That is a leadership act.
It is a leadership act. And helping other people focus on something more productive rather than more negative also brings a different kind of energy into your workplace and into your business and into your life. You know, several months ago I had the great honor of meeting Tachi Kiyuchi, who was the former CEO of Mitsubishi America. And he brought Mitsubishi here into the company. And he, lovely man, really lovely man. And he said, just remember something. People will tell you everything that you need to know about them, because how a person does one thing is how they actually do everything. And that's about the energy that you bring into, you know, into your life and how it reverberates on every single level. It's
just
not
come
just
back to that statement again. That is so
yeah.
important what you just said. How they do one thing is how they do everything.
Exactly.
If we just press pause for a second to let that sink in for certainly for me and for all of us You know, certainly I sometimes think I'm not quite always consistent through my life. Everything
mm-hmm.
is not always congruent. And yet, in the bigger picture, it probably is kind of congruent. It's paying attention to, if that's how I'm doing it, then that's really how I'm doing it everywhere.
If a person is passionate about something and you can evoke that passion in that person, then they are passionate about other aspects of their life, too. They're passionate about their convictions. They're passionate about their beliefs. And it doesn't mean they're political activists. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, that when they cook a meal, they cook it with, you know, great passion and veracity. That maybe that's not what's important to them. But whatever is important to them, they will do with great passion and fervor if they are a passionate person in one aspect of their life.
Yeah.
If they are somebody who is really concerned about relationships and business, you know, you and I are very concerned about this. This is something that we talk to people about because this is really the influence part. Is we're very, very into having people communicate with us about connecting on an authentic level and teaching other people how to do that. I can tell you in my personal life, I am that way with my partner, and I am that way with my friends. you know, so how you do one thing, you do everything.
And in fact, it's a huge energy drain within your system when that consistency is not there. Because then there's this struggle within of trying to be something one place but not being it somewhere else. And so that alignment within yourself of, in fact, bringing that congruence is so important to ultimately having influence and impact. From a vibrational level, if we talk about it from even a quantum physics level, you're broadcasting a signal, you know, of energetically, of a certain vibrational frequency and pattern, and the stronger and the more aligned, the more intense and the higher vibrational frequency that signal is, the more influence and impact you're going to have. And when it's a confused signal that's being broadcast, that creates a whole different kind of influence and impact. What do you choose?
It absolutely does. What I've done is I've taken all of this, and it really is, well, what kind of energy are you really putting out, and how are you demonstrating it where you are? You know, we're talking about business, we're talking about work, we're talking about leadership. And it really comes down to this. There are two models that exist in the world. There is a chaos model, and there's a sustainable model. Now, when I use the word sustainable, I'm not necessarily talking about the green movement, but it is the appropriate word for what I'm talking about. So a model that's built in chaos is basically built on the ego self, which are the attributes of fear, lack, and insecurity. Those characteristics create motivations and actions like competitiveness, greed, controlling behavior, perfectionism, being self-centered, those kinds of situations, and that creates a result in the business world of, you know, probably unfair practices in business, compensation, self-centered decisions, those types of things are what I'm talking about here. But in a sustainable business model, you're talking about characteristics that really come from a person's higher self. And I'm talking to a community that understands this word, the higher self, and it comes from the spiritual side of who you are. And the attributes or the characteristics of that is love, compassion, and acceptance. Now, those are sometimes difficult words to speak about in the business world, but their motivations and actions are things like this. You collaborate with other people. You give. You share. You have tolerance. You have acceptance for other people. You listen. You respect. These are fundamental things that, I don't know about you, but my mom and dad taught me as a kid. But they actually are, you know, these are reflections of your higher self, of your spiritual self, of who we're all here to be in the world. And the result or the manifestation of working like that are teams that work and places where innovation occurs. You know, people who are not only concerned about profits, but they're people.
So
leaders who can bring higher morale into their, you know, into their teams and get them to work more productively.
You know, I want to come back to the words that you used there for ego. You and I talk about ego and soul a little bit differently, and how I work for bringing them together in partnership. And in the end, we're not really talking about them so differently. But you said those attributes of coming from ego were fear and what were the other two?
Fear, lack, and insecurity.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's really easy to get on a big judgment high horse here about those that we perceive who are coming from that place, or for even beating up on ourselves when we're coming from that place. And you know, in the transformational presence work, we speak a lot about bringing ego and soul together as partners and recognizing each of those aspects of ourselves as, in fact, essential aspects of our being, the ego being an essential part of it. It's the physical aspect of our being. It's how we relate to the three-dimensional world. Yet ego has very little awareness. It only has the intellect awareness. It does not have that larger intuitive mind. And so we give it this huge responsibility, but yet it has so few tools and skills to do that. So really what I'm getting at here is, as we are coming into the world and saying, wow, I want to make a difference. I want to have an impact here. I want to have influence in a really positive way. And so now I come up against this boss or this person that I'm going to have to work with who I feel like is just in a completely egotistical place. If we were to come from the place of recognizing there's something there just that actually maybe does want to mature, but there's a fear.
Absolutely.
So what is that person really afraid of? Or what's the insecurity here? And how can I support that insecurity shifting to security? How can I step in and help, at least on an energetic level, make a shift out of fear into trust or into whatever the direction it needs to go to be operating not out of fear anymore, but out of love? What does that mean? I'm just kind of curious what happens inside of you as I talk about that.
Well, I think that when somebody is confronted with someone they're working with, that triggers them. That triggers, they're like, oh, that person is so, they're so controlling. Clearly they have trust issues. They're so controlling and it drives me crazy, because that's usually how it comes out. Because if it didn't bother the person that person was controlling, then it's not an issue for them.
Right.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for, and I want people to hear this with measure, okay, because it's not always the exact like for like. So give me a second to I'll round this whole thought out fully. Basically, if you're being triggered by somebody that is, you know, that you feel is they're controlling and, you know, they're just so fearful and they don't trust, and it becomes an issue for you and you're having an internal reaction, it means that they are your teacher. They are your reflection to say, okay, there's something inside of me that is actually controlling and doesn't trust. Okay, where do I need to locate that in me to understand what it is that's going on for me? Okay, first you deal with you, because you're your responsibility. You can't deal with help somebody overcome their fear when you're in fear. If they're triggering you, you're in your fear. So the first step is to always deal with yourself and see what it is that's resonating for you about fear, lack, and control. From that answer, you'll usually find the thing that you have to help that person with, because it's always an equal exchange. So if you need to say to them something like, you let them hear with their fear, I know sometimes this could be very difficult and it can feel out of control. But the way to get this in control and give them the positive aspect of it is to X, Y, and Z. Now, I'm being very light on this. You have to actually use the full example of where you are. People are more motivated by their fear. So if you address their fear in a soft way, like I did, you address it in a soft way and then turn it to a positive, they're more likely to take a breath. Then if you said, you know what, you're just fearful and you're just manipulative and you know what, you're a control freak and I can't work with you, that person's just going to laugh at you and say goodbye. The truth is that we're here to teach one another, and we reflect things back to each other all the time. And either you choose to learn the lesson, see where it is that you need to make the adjustment yourself, and then give that blessing back without saying, I know you're a control freak and here's what you need to do, but to give that blessing back to the person who just provided that opportunity for you, that's the way healing works. That's, for me, that's how I see transformation working.
You know, you posted on Facebook a quote from Create a World That Works that was all about transformational presence, is about holding people in their magnificence.
Yep.
And I think even if we take a step back from what you're talking about as a way of being a softness and stepping in to even address the fear in some kind of way or helping to ease that, if we take a step even back from that and come back to this place of all of life and leadership is energy in motion, and to recognize that on an energetic level, we can also have an impact for people. How we are holding them in our
yes.
thought, how we are, the energy in which we're holding them is, in fact, that's feeding that particular energy to that relationship or that situation. So how do we even just recognize, wow, she's dealing with a lot of fear right now. It's okay. I'm going to hold her in her courage right now. I'm going to hold her in her strength and in her power, and I'm going to hold a space where there's an energy that flows between us that's allowing for something more to happen. Is that going to change your relationship overnight? No, I'm not going to promise that it will do that. But I will tell you that if you begin to work on an energetic level with that person, that it begins to have a shift in what your relationship is, so that we again have influence and impact from our thoughts, from who we are. It's like Maria in your book, you in the very first chapter, I think it's the first chapter that says, you know, the starting point for healing is you, and that's really what we're talking about here.
Yeah, absolutely, and to have that compassion, and to say, you know, I've been where this person is. You know, it doesn't tweak me anymore, but I recognize where this person is. And I'm just going to love them until they can get through it.
So, you know, we could talk for a long time here about, you know, how to deal with these kinds of,
yeah,
sort of one-on-one situations, but I'd love to take us back into a bigger picture, since we earlier on in the call kind of got into that place of where are we in the U.S., where are we in the world right now, and what does that mean for influence and impact from us as individuals and as organizations in today's world that is really in crisis in a number of ways?
Well, I think that we're all being confronted with that choice. We're going to go back to that choice point. And how do you want to use your influence? How do you want to use your relationships? And how do you want to resolve this problem? Do you want to go full forward with force? Or do you want to engage in a greater solution and collaboration? Do you want to pick sides, or do you want to stand in the middle but do it in a constructive way, not in a complacent way? And I think that this is something that for me has been almost a point of contention for myself on a very personal level. It's like, where am I going to stand? What do I want to do? And why isn't anybody saying anything? Why isn't anybody talking about this in a more productive and constructive way? And then I'm going to share, a couple weeks ago, my boyfriend Valen and I got an email from Howard Schultz from Starbucks. Now, if you didn't get an email from Howard Schultz at Starbucks, it means that you probably don't drink as much coffee as the two of us. But we do, and so we're on their, like, you know, their frequent beverage program. And he sent a letter saying, you know, it's time to withhold funds from politicians. It's time to do this in a constructive way and say, until these two parties come together and actually come to a solution, we're asking you not to support any campaign contributions, and we're asking companies, and I think at last listing was 130 companies in this country who are refusing to give campaign contributions to either party until they resolve our debt crisis issue right now. And
so,
I thought this...
Go ahead.
I thought this is actually a great way to say, it doesn't matter which party you are, you're both here together and you both need to work together. And then subsequently they put together a town hall meeting under a business called NoLabels.org, which I suggest everybody check out, that basically says, we don't care which party you are, you're both there. You have to learn to work together, and you serve us, the American people. And, you know, I never really wanted to take a political stand, Alan, but I feel like we're all at a point where we have to make some decisions about what we stand for. For me, and I'm saying this out loud, I'm being public about it because I'm hoping it'll pull at the hearts of some people who are listening. For me, I'm not really interested in endorsing one political party or another. Right now, we need to come to a solution so that people get back to work and people are engaged in, you know, the beauty of this country again, and people are investing in this country again, not only the American people, but people globally. And the way to do it is to get our government to work. It doesn't matter which party is in power. So,
As you're talking about all of this, you're kind of bouncing back and forth in an interesting way to me between really what is impact and what is influence.
Yes.
And I just want to bring us back to that that awareness here, in that some of the things you're talking about are the actions of I'm going to give money or I'm not going to give money, or what, you know, who am I going to support in terms of putting the financial contribution there, and who am I not. So on that impact level in the three-dimensional world, and then you're talking about influence, you're talking about thoughts, you're talking about the way you think about something, the way you perceive something. And I'd like to keep inviting us then onto that deeper level and deeper understanding that perhaps what is behind influence, which is then behind impact, is, again, a higher awareness.
Yeah, it is a higher
awareness.
Everything
we're talking about here is lifting our own awareness to higher and higher levels. And I don't mean by that enlightened or lofty or something. I mean a bigger picture awareness, of being able to be aware of many layers of reality and of what's going on, many, many layers at the same time. And that's a pretty big challenge these days, because we are not only living in a complex world, but also an extremely complicated world. It's both of those things now. And so I love how you're talking about this influence and impact, and again, and when I'm kind of relating it to the vertical and horizontal, and seeing how these two both are important, both must be there. Impact is one level of something that happens in that three-dimensional world, and influence is something that happens about the being part of it. And then what's even underneath that, of how do we, as leaders, recognizing that we might be in any one of those three levels of leadership, following a leader or leading ourselves or leading others, how do we continue to increase our own awareness on as many levels as possible?
You know, I think that you have to make a decision on how you want to be in the world. And, you know, part of this discussion is, do you want to cooperate and collaborate, or do you want to have conflict and competition?
That's
exactly where I was going with the whole political thing. Where do you want to be?
Yeah.
Where do you want to be in your life? Where do you want to be in how you work? Where do you want to be in, you know, the political system? Where do you want to be?
You know, I think that's a great place, actually. We could talk forever, but that's a really great place for us to just press pause in this dialogue. And let's open the lines. And I've been up wandering around my room, so now I have to sit back down at the computer screen. And let's open this up to the people who are with us. We have, again, people from all over the world. Your comments and your questions for Maria or I or both of us are very welcome. Just press 1 on your phone, and that will show me that you would like to speak or ask a question. So I have Donna Robbins. Just a second, Donna, and you have a mic.
Hi.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, Donna. Hi, nice to... I'm so grateful to you two for doing this. It's just so inspirational. And I wonder, this is a question for Maria. Have you had, since you wrote your book or in the development of your ideas here, have you had a chance to really implement them? What's the reaction been? Have you heard from leaders of industry and so forth?
The book was actually written based on doing it for 6 years. And how we turned a business around. The book itself interweaves several stories from the 23 years I've been in business for examples. But I will tell you that the book was written based on turning a business from so far in the red into the black, and how we inspired a group of people to come together and to care about one another, to care about what they were doing, and to really embrace these sustainable practices. So I can tell you they work because I've implemented them. And we did it unknowingly. I have to tell you, we really actually did it completely unknowing. You know, it was a group of people who individually were praying in their office, and somehow we didn't know that until after we all separated and went our separate ways after 6 years of working together, which is very interesting. I do teach these practices to other business leaders and other people who are working in large corporations, and what they have told me is that they now have a new set of rules of engagement on how to have influence with other people with different impact. And it works. It really does work. When you treat people with kindness and compassion and you have actual specific tools that you're using, you get a result.
I think that's it's just so inspirational. You know, this is the kind of news that we need to spread to really counteract what we're getting, you know, as what passes for news these days. And I think it's it's just wonderful. And I just thank you so much for your work. And Alan, as always, thank you very much for bringing so much inspiration to us.
Oh, thank you, Donna. Thank you. It's nice to hear your voice. Who else? question or a comment? Well, then, Maria, let's just pick up from there then about where we left off of making that choice of, so who you're going to be.
Yeah, who do you want to be? Oh, did somebody just come in?
Yes, somebody just, thank you. Oh, Donna, that's Donna again. Yeah.
Well, can I do another question here?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yes, I just wondered if there has been any issue of religion or religious conflict or anything like that has come into play here when people were praying. I just wondered how that kind of thing, because the religious stuff is so strong these days about...
Yeah, I can answer that. Donna, here's what was happening. We were all in our own offices praying, and we didn't know that each other was doing that. And each of us were in actually very different denominations but had very similar core values and beliefs. And it was funny because after this period of time, you know, here we are down in the East Village having lunch together, you know, the group of us, and some more, quote-unquote, spiritual than others, as they would put it, and saying, you know, during that time, all I did was pray. All I did was pray that this would get better, that I could do something to help these, you know, we used to call them the kids, which is not HR savvy, but I think you get what I mean. You know, how are we going to help these, you know, these people that we're charged with? And I think that when you have a group of people who, it doesn't matter, it's not important to, in my mind, to connect people under one denominational belief or get people in a prayer circle. I think that when people in their hearts want to be of service, even though that may not be the words that they use, that they sincerely want to be of service to the people that are working for and with them, that miracles happen, that change happens, that the guidance comes of what to do. As I said, I didn't write this book until afterwards, and I would never name the company. I would never name the other individuals because it's not appropriate. It was an experience we had together. It was remarkable, actually.
Cool. Thank you again.
Fantastic. And I just want to come back in. This I kind of have the sense, Maria, that when you say that word praying, you're using that in a very kind of universal sense.
Yes, very universal.
Yeah.
Very, very great. Universal.
We have several other questions. If we can go to Susanna, just let me bring you on the mic. Susanna, you have the mic.
Hello. So my question, the whole concept of the focus on leadership, I was very passionate about that some years ago and felt as I started to develop my work in it that it was going to pull me into working in organizations and in the more corporate arena, which was so not my thing, that I kind of backed away from it and took my work in a different direction. And so what I'm hearing in how you particularly, well, actually both of you, that there's a way in which we're all leaders. And I'm trying to even formulate my question. It has something to do with I get that like the corporate world has more, it legitimizes leadership. People recognize themselves as a leader. They're named as a leader or they're not. And then there's all these other people who are leaders in their lives, in their communities, in their families, in their, you know, as a solo practitioner. And I'm curious how, like, those are the people I want to reach. And I guess I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that. If I'm not clear in my question, help me out here.
Alan, do you want to answer that one?
Sure. What strikes me initially about that, Susanna, is again sort of understanding life is energy in motion, and recognizing mm-hmm. that in the ways that we are all leaders. In that, I mean that we are all constantly creating the mass consciousness, or contributing to the mass consciousness of our present and our future.
Right.
And so just that shift in awareness among conversations around the dinner table, or meeting a friend for coffee, or having a walk with someone, or, you know, just the conversations that come up of life, as we are shifting awareness in that way to recognize that's really how the mass consciousness is going to shift. That's how we're creating a different reality for today and the future, is by how we are each being really intentional and giving great attention to our thoughts, to our perspectives, to the way we engage with the world, recognizing that as energetic leadership. That is putting an energy out there and a particular vibration and pattern into the mass consciousness. As more and more people are putting a particular energy into the mass consciousness, then the mass consciousness begins to shift. Does that
Yes, absolutely. And I think where the question, my more specific question then comes from is, so, you know, that's what I really wanted to get behind and really inspire people who had, particularly women, who had the capacity to recognize themselves as leaders in their particular sphere of influence, like how to inspire them, because it seems like a lot of the leadership work is focused on the big leaders, the leaders in business.
Yes.
And I guess I'm just looking for some insight in how to widen that conversation and draw people into it.
I think that's one of the gifts, certainly, of Maria's book of Healing the Corporate World, because she comes right back to stating in chapter one, it begins with you.
Mm-hmm.
And in most recent book, Create a World That Works, it's so much about transformational presence. How does each one of us walk in a presence that has influence and impact in the world? How are we showing up? And so I think from both of these books, you probably could find a lot that addresses who must we be as individuals in order to make an impact in the whole.
Well, I bought your book, and I haven't started reading it. And Maria, I signed up for your little weekly course as recommended by Elizabeth Purvis. So I will step into both of those.
Great. We're going to move on. Thank you so much, Susanna, because there are several other people who have questions.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go to Chris. Chris, you have the mic.
Yeah. Hi, Alan. Thank you very much. hi, Maria. I've just got a question for you. Wonderful work that you're doing, and just delighted to hear about it. How do you, I do a lot of work with corporate businesses and leaders. I'm just wondering, when you're standing in front of a group of corporate guys and girls, how do you prepare yourself for that? And are there any particular questions or issues that you raise with those groups that really help to shift the energy?
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, for me, I actually am somebody who sit and I meditate for a few moments before I address any group. For me, this is hard work. This is something I'm passionate about. I respect the fact that I've been, you know, given the task to help open up the hearts and minds of other people. So I always do a meditation that I'm responsible with that. So that's how I prepare. The second part of the question was what, Chris? Tell me that again.
It was, what questions might you put to the group or what issues will you touch on that we talk about a shift in energy, and sometimes at a particular point in a meeting or a talk or whatever, there's a particular shift in energy. And I'm just wondering what your experience is of what those triggers be.
Yeah, I can tell you the one that always makes everybody just go backwards in their chair and they draw breath, and I get a lot of faces. And this is always the one. I always say to them, you know, the starting point is with you, and it's about you taking responsibility for you. And I get a lot of body language that is pretty negative, to be perfectly frank, but it has to be addressed. And then we do a little play, and we get people to understand that sitting and blaming the person who is above you, beneath you, beside you, or in front of you, or behind you is not going to get you where you want to go, nor is it going to make the organization any healthier. And there's a variety of different playful things that I do, and I use a lot of humor, Chris. Chris, you got to use a lot of humor, because when you can make people laugh at the situation, then you can actually get a breakthrough. But that is always the one when I tell people, it's, you know, you have to take responsibility for you. You can't change anybody else. It has to start with you first.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, Chris. Thanks for that question. And I want to just piggyback on the humor thing, because that's, I love how you're saying that, and that's kind of, the more we can start to laugh at ourselves, especially at first, the more it kind of opens the door and for big shifts to happen. You know, and I work with these four levels of engagement: drama, situation, choice, and opportunity. And when I'm with a group and we first do something to experience the drama of what's going on, and we really play it big, and people laugh, and they realize, oh my God, this is awful. But it's also, they laugh at themselves, and okay, now we can, the doors are open, we can go anywhere. So thank you for bringing that in, Maria. Fantastic.
You're welcome. Humor is a very healing tool.
Yeah. David, let me give you the mic. David, you'd like to speak.
Yes, hi, Alan, and I'm Maria. I'd like to follow up a little bit maybe on Alan, your response to Suzanne's question. And you talked about our choices, our words, our thoughts, our actions are all contributing to the mass consciousness. And I guess that's the place where we all can engage that forward momentum in the world. The thing that is, I guess, kind of debilitating to me is that the whole structure of our culture is based on the kind of the low ego level motivations. The system seems to feed on greed, competition, exploitation, and really a kind of mentality that separates us from each other and then tries to overcome each other. And do you, you know, as you do your work in the corporate world and in all kinds of arenas, do you see, have a vision of how the kind of the underlying structures of our society, economics and sociology and politics, can shift as mass consciousness begins to change?
I would say, certainly, as mass consciousness begins to change, then our perspectives, all those things that you just said, will shift. But it also, the mass consciousness shifts as we shift. And that's really where I want to come back to focus. It's to first recognize that all those descriptors that you gave of where the mass consciousness is, well, what's that created from? It's created from us. And it kind of goes back to Maria's thing of, to it, it begins with you. It's coming back to the personal responsibility. It's recognizing that if I want the world to shift, what has to shift inside of me in order for that to happen? And to recognize that when there's something going on out there that is really appalling to me, well, what little tiny bit of that is still actually present in me? What do I still have to go back and address inside of me there? And then to continue to invite shifts of awareness. The reason I created Transformational Presence Coaching and wrote this book, Create a World That Works, is because I kept hearing so many amazing thought leaders tell us about all the things that we needed to do differently in order to have a world that works. And, you know, many of those things I would listen to and say, yes, 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 absolutely, that is what needs to happen, whether that's from an environmental standpoint or government or business or whatever. And clearly realizing that none of those things were going to happen until we started to think differently, until we started to show up in the world differently. So that really is, to me, where it has to begin. It's coming back all the time to who am I, how am I showing up, what is the influence that I choose to bring to my surroundings by who I am, and therefore, what is the impact that might flow out of that to make a difference in the three-dimensional world?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks
yeah,
for that question.
I think of a book by theologian Reinhold Niebuhr back in the 40s, I think, Moral Man, Immoral Society. And he kind of made his point, I guess, was that even though human beings, as individuals, may be acting in very ways that are full of integrity and even compassion for their fellow creatures that they know, the very structure of society kind of overpowers that when it comes to basically corporate decisions. Corporations are, by law, mandated to act in their own.
We're almost out of time, David. So I just want to wrap up with this, because I think you're really kind of introducing in a way a whole other conversation that we could have, which is taking us into the understanding that we are all, both as individuals and then as various collectives around the world, we're all on different learning curves. And that is a whole other area of conversation, of recognizing how do we work in a world where everyone is on different learning curves, everyone is learning different lessons at the same time. One of my teachers used to say we all have the same 100 lessons to learn, it's just that we learn them all at different times, which makes living in the world a little complicated.
I love that.
That's, as I said, that's kind of a whole other conversation, but maybe I'll just leave it there. To be aware, that's another piece of our awareness, of recognizing that we're all on different learning curves, and how do we honor that as well? As Maria said early on in the call, wherever you are right now is the perfect place for where you are, and where do you choose to go with that? We need to wrap up because we're at the top of the hour. Maria, I want to thank you so much for being with us. If there was one thing that you want to leave us with today, what is that?
Fear is highly overrated. You know, it's been something that people have been feeding. I don't know where I said it, but people have been feeding it on Twitter. So I wanna just say fear is highly overrated. It's far greater and more powerful use of your energy and time to live in the now, to be positive, and to work together with other people. That's it.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much. I think I would sort of, when you say fear is highly overrated, it makes me want to say, and love is highly underrated.
Exactly.
And I would just leave you with, so pay attention to how you are showing up in every moment. Thank you so much, everyone, for being with us. Thank you, Maria. This has been great fun, and I hope we can do it again. Take
Absolutely.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are currently the only person in this conference.